Fred Film Radio, Berlin International Film Festival, Germany.
Angela Cherby, Fred Film Radio from the Berlinale 2022. I'm here with Maggie Perrin, director of The Forger, a special gala screening of the festival. Good morning. Good morning, Maggie.
Good morning.
Listen, your film is a biopic, and normally it was always a kind of a challenging thing to put on screen the life of a once lived person. Which was the most challenging aspect that you have to face in writing the story of Sioma Schönau for the screen?
That was the tone. Sioma in life as a person and in his book, Sioma has an enormous joyfulness and he's always smiling. Even when he felt like crying, he was smiling. Even if he told me about really sad things, he was smiling. He was kind of smiling and crying at the same time.
Yeah, actually, this is the first thing that comes to mind watching the film, you know, that he is like kind of too happy, kind of out of place with his happiness in this specific moment of his life. And was it difficult to couple his persona, this positivity that he had, to that specific period of time, which was very dark and grim and difficult for the world and for Germany especially?
No, because, I mean, Sioma had this enormous emotional depth. He's not superficial at all. He is not. And the Sioma in our movie is not superficial either. He's going out and he's copying this this way of behavior most Germans had, and they were in complete denial. You know, most Germans were in complete denial, especially in Berlin. You know, mm-hmm. Berlin in the 20s was so alive and beaming. And a lot of people, they were just in complete denial. And most people pretended that they don't care about politics and just wait till the war is over. Mm-hmm. Sioma was telling me the whole Berlin was filled with young men. So I said, but how could you walk around if people didn't ask you why I'm not going to war? And he said, Maggie, they didn't go to war either. It was full. It was packed with people who were saying, oh, this is really hard and the war is horrible, but I'm just... I think this was so interesting. I mean, mm-hmm. we are telling about a film about the biggest city in Germany in 1943. You know, I'm not telling a film about a small city where everyone knows everyone. I think this would be completely different. I mean, we had 1 million citizens in Berlin in 1943. It was a brilliant hiding place. And Sioma looked so much like the normal German wanted to look like. And he was just copy-paste their behavior. And I think this is so brilliant. And actually, people ask me, do you think it's adequate that he's happy? And I think, especially Germans, I mean, you're an Italian.
Yeah, I know.
But if Germans tell me, do you want to tell me how a Jew is surviving? Are you? Because, you know, we are like big and pointing the fingers on Israel and things. And I think maybe we as Germans shouldn't point fingers on any kind of people. Yeah. And yes, too, it was Sioma's way of surviving was because he was so blonde, going into the light and copying the German, especially mm-hmm. those who went to war, you know, telling them I'm going to war tomorrow. And then and then he got like food for free and they got an accommodation for a night. I have to go back and la la. And he was just with the story. He could like, he really survived and talking about people who didn't go to war and we can't win this war if everyone is not going to war. And this was so
Yeah, it is the way you portraying the past of Germany in that specific era, time of the world history is really clever on my side, because you show us how cruel and absurd was the Nazi regime in the small things. I mean, yes. You know, I mean, we all know what happened, you know, on the larger scale, but we don't know. We don't know. We never think about what it was a day to day life mm-hmm. under that regime, and the fact that he is happy to adapt and to copy and to hide himself using that absurdities to go on in this life is, I think, the biggest act of rebellion that the guy could have done back then. No, don't you think?
Absolutely. He's really he rebels against stigmatization, you know? And what's a nice story? No, he's drawing this cartoon. And I was asking Ronald Lussard, you know, from Charlie Hebdo, if he wanted to draw it. And there was first a yes, and then there came the pandemic, and then there was a no, and then he couldn't do it. But this would have been like the crazy combination.
Yeah.
Sioma, who really rebels against stigmatization, and Luz together, because, you know, after when everyone was wearing these buttons, Je suis Charlie, remember that? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah, of course.
I think this was nonsense because actually most of us tried to fit in. You know, it's just like if I look at myself, I have to say, most of the time I try to, I mean, I'm quite a lefty and I'm quite left wing and I'm quite, but I'm trying to fit, you know. So this just recently, I think this was nonsense. But Sioma, he was really like, he was putting all these symbols and turning them upside down, you know, like, okay, yeah, how will, okay, you think this is for him? This was a piece of paper with two stamps on it.
Yeah, exactly, you know? Exactly. Which was even the most absurd thing is that your life depended on a small piece of paper with the right stamps on it, in the right position. That's it. And you was either saved or doomed for the right or the wrong stamp, which was...
Yes.
And violent in itself, you know, if you think about it.
And you go there and there are five rooms and you say you only have one room and the rest belongs to us. And I read all these rules, you know. So they were deported. And the moment they left Germany, every belongings belonged to the German people, which actually was not right. Because
which was not the German
the big Nazis was coming in and getting this and getting this and getting this and getting this. You know, it's the same with Donald Trump. They tell you it's the same for everyone, but then there is this elite who gets everything. Mm. You know, like your prime minister celebrating in the middle of the pandemic. You know?
It's really
crazy. And not even realizing how crazy this is. This is like, I'm not comparing your prime minister to the Nazis. I'm just talking about shameless behavior. Yeah? Mm-hmm. Not that people come and tell me, you are comparing Mr. Johnson. I'm not comparing Johnson to them.
No, it's the attitude towards power.
Yeah, I just say there's an amount of shamelessness that is astonishing for me. And this is in the neighbor. You know, the neighbor, Mrs. Peters, she's so shameless. And I think it's this, on the one hand, completely fear and you do everything the way they want it. And on the other hand, it's completely shameless. And both is on the same metal.
The same
metal. Fear and complete shamelessness, you know? And Sioma had none of it. Sioma never behaved shameless. I think he was really nice and gentle, but he was not fearful.
No. It was not fearful. And another astonishing and touching aspect of his character is that he's never angry. He never wants to pay back them with some angry action or violent action. He's always trying to outsmart them. Them in terms of the system, you know, trying to be smarter than the system and trying to take advantage of the system. Mm-hmm. And what you say was my next question is, which was about the racism and the violent faking a non-violent behavior of regular people. As Mrs. Peters, which was like the neighbor of Sioma, of all the others, women and men that tried to fit in that specific political moment, but being even worse than the system because they were trying to tell themselves that they were good men and good women, but they were actually behaving in the same violent and absurd way that the system is.
Absolutely.
And this is something that is very contemporary as well.
Absolutely.
Which makes it even more scary.
Absolutely. Really, I mean, I started writing in 2013. It was the beginning of Obama. And then when Trump came in with all this shameless behavior, with all this let's make America great. And, you know, then the pandemic came. And then it was so crazy. And I thought, wow, wow, wow. But for me, this was, for me as a writer and as a person experiencing this shameless behavior, seeing how racism all of a sudden becomes, who said this? Yeah. So, wow. And I mean, this is just, I mean, the Forger now is just perfect. 7 years ago, it would not have the same impact.
Really. No, absolutely. I totally agree. Listen, which is your attitude towards past? Being a German woman, an artist, a writer, and with a film like this one?
Well, I mean, Sioma always said the best way against racism is mixed marriage, you know, when Jewish people and Christian people's married. I mean, I have this a lot in my family. Like, my uncle was in concentration camp. He was married to the second older sister from my mother, and my younger cousin, Salomon. His grandfather was Jewish. He couldn't use his name Salomon under Mussolini. He's Salomon lives in Florence, and his mother is from Italy. So, I am this crazy mixture, so my feelings about Germany are mixed, you know. Would probably be different if my father had been, or my grandfather had been, an SS officer or something. So I think my mom's father was in the party. So I'm really like this all kind of mixture in me. And I think there were a few really, really horrible people. But what scares me was the moment Hitler was elected, how fast it went down. This is what scares me about the past. And it all worked about fear.
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
It's not a little paper with two stamps. It's, and you get shot if you open the door. And this is so crazy. And I think if we look at our past and we look about parts in our past, their fear was used to put people down. I think we should look at this again and again and again, because if it repeats, it takes sometimes over a decade.
Look
in Spain. In Spain, how long was Franco there for? 40 years?
40 years, more or less, yeah.
It's 40 years. And we have to be, you know, we have to look at it now here in Germany. The very right, very, very right, they go on the demonstrations against the corona policy, hand in hand with those who don't want to get vaccinated. I think this
is the same thing in Italy, actually, it's the same trend. It's the same trend because, as you say, fear, back then in the time that your film is telling us, fear is used as a tool to convince people to do what they want to do, but not because I threaten you, but I also try to give you some fake logical explanation about this, which is what Hitler did, the Aryan people, the race, the money, and all this kind of mixed feelings that touches it. The touch you in your belly is nothing intellect, it's nothing logical, it's all it's kind of an animal instinct that forces you to go on and follow those rules, and fake news, we are living in the era of fake news, but back then it was the same. And it's really fascinating and scary and upsetting at the same time, seeing how things have not changed that much.
Yeah, I know now the answer to your question.
Yeah.
So the answer to your question is this. I think if we use the past as a setting for a good and bad story, this is boring, because I've seen this a lot. But if we use the past to investigate things that we don't understand in the now, it becomes interesting.
Yeah, I totally agree. And actually, it is happening with your film, because your film is a fantastic, entertaining piece of art, because it is entertaining. The story is fascinating, but it keeps on giving us like little slap in the face, slaps in the face.
You know, we all, like my whole team, everyone from the DOP to the art director, we all investigated these little things. For example, everyone was saying Heil Hitler all the time, what we hardly ever do in movies about the past. And they all said Heil Hitler all the time. Everywhere is Adolf Hitler. It's not with the Nazis. He was everywhere. You know, when he's writing his postcards. So what we did, we put these little things in it all the time. Yeah. And because Joma was so joyful, it's entertaining. But underneath, we investigated every little thing. You know, when he's ironing, we found these ironings that we plug in, you know. And I think this is interesting, to go back in the past, investigating and looking for answers, to be prepared in the now, or to build up an awareness. I think it's not about teaching, it's about building up awareness. I think we filmmakers, we can really make things conscious and we can build up awareness. I hate when filmmakers start teaching, preaching and messaging around, because I've been to school, you know, it was my luckiest day when I was able to leave school. So I don't want to be there again.
You know, I totally agree. Listen, about this Heil Hitler thing, well, it was something that I noticed watching the film, that barely no one believes it when they say it. It was like a compulsory thing that you have to say, but there was very few characters in the film that actually said it like they believed in it. I mean, Sioma, of course, he did not believe. He used it like a shield to hide himself behind. Yeah. And also Mrs. Peters and also the other ladies that he has, he's trying to fool being a good German. They always say Heil Hitler, but it was just like a way of speaking.
Yeah, we know what we did. We use subtitles. Every Heil Hitler in the movie has a subtitle. It has Heil Hitler unlike you. It has a Heil Hitler almost like and it has a Heil Hitler like I will wait for the war is over, you know, there's, hey, we're on the same boat, we just know he's not good, but we say Heil Hitler and then tomorrow we say it's good again. We
have all these
codes in it, you know. But do you remember saying everyone said it, even if you met a friend on the street who was Jew, they said it, because if you say, if you hug yourself, which men couldn't do on the street anyway, honestly. They were so homonymous. They were so afraid of homosexuals. I mean, the Nazis, they were...
which was like very blind and very fake, because there were plenty of Nazis, plenty of homosexual Nazis. So what's the point?
No.
But it was just a facade to be kept, you know?
Yeah.
Like every right-wing party is doing in these days, actually. And again, we are back to the contemporaneity of this story. There's one last question I want to ask you. It's a more technical. How was it to reconstruct visually this era? I mean, was it difficult? Was it complicated? Was it the one location that could be used again, or do you have to rebuild everything? Because it was very precise. It was very, very precise.
Thank you. Thank you. I mean, honestly, our budget was so, so ridiculously small. In the beginning, we had the feeling, oh, this will look like a theater piece. You know, that we open doors, closing doors. And we were talking about what we don't have. And then I said, listen, we always talk about what we don't have. Let's see what we have, you know. And so we started with the indoor things, with all these little details, like the ironing thing. And then we said, okay, we can go out in the Münchner Straße. And we were lucky because there was an historical piece shot and they were coloring all the walls for us. I was standing there and I mean, it was a male director. He had twice and a half my money, but at least all the walls were the right color. Because, you know, in Germany, there's still this massive gap between male directors shooting films and have 10 million, so like me, and I have 3.7. And it's still this money gap. We don't have to. There is just this big gap. But they were painting the walls for us, which is good. The snow was coming from the sky. So the snow is no film snow. It was just there. We arrived there one morning and it looked so pretty. And, well, we were lucky. And I have to say, my DOP, he's a wizard. He's a wizard. I mean, I talked so much about camera angles and things, but the way this lightning with the money we have, this is unbelievable. But there's a funny story. We came to see the apartment for the first time and it looked brilliant. You know, the sun coming in. And I said, oh, this is so beautiful. And then my DOP said, yeah, this is a Spielberg movie. It will never look like this again because we have to keep the sun out. And what we have will look like this little gray spot here on the wall. You can't have a light like this. And then, no, Maggie, it's the sun. If we pretend to have a sun, you're in a Spielberg movie. It's not. And but when the actual sun came in through the windows, it looked even better. Now, my DOP, I'm lucky. My production designer, Evie Stiebler, and my DOP, and they really liked each other. They were like running for the locations. And, and sometimes I listen, we don't have the money for it. And then they were sneaking it in.
Right, you know, you were doing the Sioma way, you know, you were trying to adapt to the situation and get the most out of it. One last question, because I'm curious, how long was the shooting for this?
30 days.
How many?
30.
30 days.
Yeah.
Wow, you were fast. You're a fast director.
I know, but the thing that the second, the third day, I said, I feel like I'm vomiting out scenes in the evening. I mean, we rehearsed every night, and then we rehearsed half a year before. We were really well rehearsed and everything staged, and we really were only shooting. You know, there was not like, oh, could I play it another way? No, you played this way two times. But there was one night when I was sitting really on the stairs, and I was saying to my DOP, I never shot so many scenes in one day.
Well, you know, with the right crew and the right attitude, you can do whatever you want. I mean, and you did it. I mean,
thank you.
Well, thanks a lot. Thanks a lot to Maggie Perrin, director of The Forger, special gala screening at the Berlinale 2022. Thanks a lot for sharing your thoughts and your film with us.
Thank you.
I am Angela Cerbi for Fred, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on Fred.fm and smartphone apps.